In the midst of all that is uncertain, all that gives us fear, we ask for God's hope to bind us up. Amen. Please be seated. It happened in an instant. Speculation flying through the halls of power. What started as a whisper, a mere story of interest from the countryside, has become something more. Reports have made their way to King Herod about a new prophet preaching and baptizing, sharing a story of a new life, one seeking justice and peace. And everyone is listening, and everyone is watching. What will happen next? The king is afraid, our gospel tells us. And in his fear, a memory emerges today, a memory of his birthday party, an exclusive event with only the most elite members of society invited to participate in this lavish display of wealth and power. But this party wasn't marked by laughter or singing. No, it is a gruesome story that we heard today. One wrought with problematic themes, questions about a marriage with grudges held, potentially provocative dancing, scheming, manipulation, murder. It's a challenging reading. So you may be wondering, where is the good news here? How do we make sense of this reading today, especially in light of this weekend's events? For many, when they hear this gospel reading, all that emerges from this text is the horrific death of John the Baptist. Perhaps that is why this reading is skipped in some lectionaries, but not in the Episcopal Church. We read it in all of its detail today, and that is important. But if our only focus when hearing this gospel is on the death of John the Baptist, there is risk here for us. Because that narrowed focus makes it altogether too easy to fall into binary thinking. And when we do that, then all we can register is the pride of Herod, the scheming of Herodias, or the manipulation of a child, leaving us with an unsatisfactory struggle for liberation by biblical characters that we determine to be innocent or guilty, ignoring the reality that these very people, are both abuser and victim at the same time, making choices they believe to be unavoidable, pawns in a struggle for political power. And so there must be more here, especially given the questionable historicity of this narrative and its placement here in Mark. Before we dismiss this gruesome story today or think that it doesn't apply to us, let's look again at the main elements. The writers in Mark leave us some pretty significant things to consider today. They tell us first that Herod feared John. And why wouldn't Herod be afraid? His hold on power was shaky at baseline, and John, after all, was the leader of a movement among the people. Not the powerful, the people. A voice crying in the wilderness, critiquing Herod and all the leaders for their treatment of the people and the corruption that marked their life. John spoke of a new life, a new reign, maybe even a new king, the leader of a movement that could not be silenced. That seems like something a weak leader would fear. They tell us that Herodias held a grudge. John's criticism of the treatment of the people and the questionable morality of the king's family included Herodias, after all, and that would have brought into question her marriage to Herod, which would have also questioned her power, the power she was afforded by her proximity to this king. Seems like a pretty good reason to hold a grudge. And then there's, at the opportune time, a seemingly innocent girl looking to her mother and saying, "What do I ask for?" A perfect opportunity to think again about how others are drawn into power struggles that they may not fully understand, even as they participate in them. Maybe that could even give us a moment to pause and think about the ways that children are all too often positioned in adult aspirations without thought for their own desires or their dreams. In response to the girl's request, the writers tell us that the king was deeply grieved, yet out of regard for his oaths and for the guest, he did not want to refuse her. Together, all these details have much to teach us beyond what is immediately visible in this story, for they reveal a toxic mix of feelings, fear, anger, and desperation. All the motivation that was needed to justify this death, all the motivation that is ever needed to justify the mistreatment of any person. And maybe that is precisely why we are meant to sit with Herod's memory today. Because sometimes the most spiritually reflective thing that we can do is to let something be complicated, to allow ourselves to be discomforted rather than rushing to find a silver lining in the story, to try not to fix the story so that it meets our theological comforts, but to allow our discomfort to invite us into a deeper understanding of our call here and now. That is a hard task, my friends, especially when it comes to expressing our theological selves in this world around us. It's hard because our world is scary. This moment feels most fragile, and we have been trained to avoid offense at all cost. Perhaps that's why many would tell you that what God needs is meekness and civility for the divine image to be shared, that true community and welcome is somehow always tied to politeness. But today's gospel challenges that very assumption, reminding us that divinity is a disturbance of power, and that our prophetic ministry has always, will always, call us to speak openly in opposition to those with power who stand in the way of God's loving justice. That is our call, still today. In this moment, there is so much at stake. There are so many in need, crying out for justice and peace, victims of systems of greed and power, and they are asking us to pay attention. You can hear these cries. You hear them in the sound of feet, walking through a desert at night in search of a better life, in the rattle of loose change in a cup extended your way, in the grumble of an unfed stomach, in another pinned down body screaming, "Please, I can't breathe," or in our collective gasp at the crack of gunfire in another senseless shooting. There is much at stake, but make no mistake, we do not need to be overwhelmed, not now. We do not have to be ruled by our fear, anger, and desperation. We do not have to remain bystanders in this exploitive system of our time. For in the chapter just before today's reading, we see Jesus sending out disciples, that line of succession that continues to this day and includes each and every one of us, marked and sealed as Christ's own forever, made to pour out love in this broken world. And that means that we must speak, that we have to speak to the injustices of our world, that we can do hard things because God's mission doesn't rely on any one voice crying in the wilderness, but on our shared voices, on our shared action. That is our hidden strength. That's how we disturb systems of power that tell us today that division is the only way. So let us not grow weary in our ministry, St. Luke's. Let us walk to the places where the tears of this world are gathering and build a house of belonging there, a sanctuary for all people. This is our faith. This is our hope. And we are called for a time such as this. Amen.